Sourcing for innovation, making sense of the rapidly changing worlds of artificial intelligence, workforce development, and digital transformation.
Sourcing for Innovation, episode 37. My name is Adam Curtis. So happy to have once again Matt Derulla, CEO of Catalyte. Matt, how are you?
I'm great, Adam. Great to be here.
This is going to be a fun one. You sent me this article that'll be the sort of diving in point for our talk a couple of days ago, and you seem fired up about it. So this was an article in the New York Times about some research that recently came out from the National Bureau of Economic Research. What they did was they sent a whole bunch of fake resumes to 100 companies to see what the response would be if they changed just the person's name to sound more Black, more white, male, female, and some other protected characteristics. And the results came back, I think probably not too much to your surprise, but employees contacted presumed white applicants 9.5% more often than presumed Black applicants. So the headline here is that racial discrimination in hiring practices results from resumes. What was your initial reaction when you read this story, when you saw this research?
Oh, it was exciting to actually see this get some attention from the mainstream media. And, you know, the New York Times calling this out, putting it on the front page, it should be a wake-up call to everybody. I was not surprised by the results, as you said. You know, there's bias rampant through the sort of resume process. And it's not just the racial sort of white versus Black. There's also gender discrimination. And in the reality, when you get down to it, beyond the bias, what is the role of the resume in hiring? Is it actually some kind of proxy for how someone's going to ultimately perform? There's no evidence that it is, yet it still remains sort of the key to unlock the interview process for the vast majority of roles that are out there. And in an age where, you know, people are talking about, you know, big data, AI, using data to make better decisions, it's completely crazy to me that we still rely on this piece of paper, you know, electronically distributed as sort of the starting point of a conversation about getting a job.
Is the resume the equivalent of too big to fail at this point? Is there too much invested in it from corporations, from LinkedIn, from the hundreds of thousands of, you know, counselors and consultants out there that'll help you craft it, from even now AI saying like, hey, just feed your resume into here and we'll make it better. We'll use AI to formulate your resume to be screened by AI. Is it too big to fail? Have we gone too far?
No, it's not. And, you know, the great thing that I still have faith in is that companies will gravitate toward competitive advantage. And I think that certainly me and the company that I represent at Catalyte have a lot of data to support that there are alternatives to the resume that, you know, open up new large talent oceans for employers that give you a better prediction of who's going to be a high performer and, you know, a sequence of sort of positive business outcomes that come from hiring high performers, you know, from higher productivity to more customer success to, you know, ultimately, you know, a much more strong business all around. Because it's fascinating to me that the number one sort of agenda point for most companies is like, we got to get the right people. You know, that is, you know, without that, most companies are really nothing. Yet we're still so backward in the way we're approaching this. But the good news is that companies are taking steps forward. And, you know, we're working with some of the leading companies that are thinking about how data used in a really ethical way, a smart way, can really unlock much better decision-making processes and completely, you know, turn the current model, which is all about, you know, a resume that's, you know, going to be reviewed with bias, is probably exaggerated, to actually something that's, you know, something that gives you some insight into who actually may be the right fit, the right aptitude for the roles you're looking for in a much more data-driven way. I would like ask the folks that may be listening to this, you know, in what other part of your business do you sit on all this data about your employee, like, you know, a customer or an employee, you know, the, like the performance, you know, what you're looking for in a certain role. You have all this incredible data that you've taken the time to collect, and your organization has sort of identified what is right, and you do nothing with it. I mean, if you were in the marketing organization, like, well, can you imagine if you had all this information on your customers and like what makes a great customer, and you didn't use it to actually go ahead and try to find them? You know, it more and more, I think the CHRO is going to have to be left behind or jump forward and start taking advantage of data and actually thinking probably a lot more like a CMO on how do I use the data within my organization in a privacy safe way to go ahead and start making better decisions about the people that are coming in. And I don't think there's a world where the resume is sort of central in that new world.
Despite the negative headline, despite the depressing stats that were in the survey, in the story, I think that there were a couple of elements that are leaning a little bit more towards what you're saying. One of them was that one of the characteristics or one of the pieces of data that strongly predicted less discrimination from companies in this study was a centralized HR operation. So companies that have a strong, centralized, an organized way in which to hire, granted through this study, through the resume, but is that a bridge towards what we're talking about there? Or what is the bridge then from getting those companies now that are using a resume in a non-biased way to think about it differently and come into a little bit more of a data-driven approach to hiring?
Yeah, I think this is a really important point. And, you know, that if an organization is left to, you know, have the decisions be aligned with sort of like the on the field actions in an organization, I'll pick on like a sales organization, you know, the incentives there, like not given any new tools is, you know, to basically hire as fast as you can. And high performers, yes, you think you can find them. But at the end of the day, it's like, as long as they're not a bad performer, like you'll got to fill that seat quickly to, you know, hit your revenue target and the like. So the incentives, if like the organization is sort of just allowing this to happen without any tools and systems, it will probably default to sort of the way it's always been done. I think so. The idea of a centralized approach, you know, I believe in, you know, using technology to probably, you know, you don't need a lot of people or a lot of investment to actually go ahead and start tackling this problem in a more direct way, in a way that scales. And then using that as a feeder into all the organizations. Like in the example I just used, you could imagine a world where that first stop, you know, before a hiring manager even has a chance to meet with someone and go through a sort of structured interview process, which I believe is very valuable. But, you know, instead of a talent recruiter looking at some resumes, let's actually have people maybe do an assessment, you know, and look at that assessment based on the high performers in your organization that have taken a similar assessment and see if there's good match there. And that might be, and we've seen that's been a really good signal to go ahead and start making better decisions about sort of who gets access to the interview process. And then as your folks in the field who are trying to fill that sales position, now they're left with a data-informed sort of initial pool, as opposed to what, you know, essentially ends up being almost randomized based on the resume and probably filled with, you know, bias and other things.
So yeah,
it makes a lot of sense.
It seemed to be a grab bag. The more that somebody was left on their own accord, sort of, you know, if I'm out at a store and I'm just like, oh crap, I need to hire somebody next week, I'm looking through resumes, I'm like, okay, that guy's name is Adam too. Great. Got to be a good person. I'm hiring them. So to take that level of randomness almost out of the process is going to be helpful. And if you can do that centralized and with data, then that just makes it even less bias and more pointing towards high performers. So not just about hiring, it's about hiring the right person.
That's right. And if you, you know, start like thinking about this at scale, you know, think about, you know, very large industries that have tremendous amount of volume, have retention challenges. You know, you can imagine this becomes very strategic. You could pick on healthcare, you could pick on, you know, right now there's a lot happening in semiconductor and manufacturing. You know, if you could actually build a system where you had a great sense of the people that are in market that already have some experience that line up with the sort of aptitudes that you've identified as an organization are great, terrific. You build out this incredible pipeline, you know, keep those folks nurtured, keep them close. And then you might find, you know, because you're not using a resume or having, you know, some requirement like a college degree, people who maybe have taken an assessment or something like that, you know, that maybe not have the exact experience, but are pretty close on every other mark. Well, you know, to me today, you know, with the amount of tools available to organizations and companies that can fill that gap on learning and skill-based experiences, you can go ahead and close that gap so that you basically eliminate your supply, talent supply issues in a very strategic, long-term competitive way. This is all possible today. You don't have to, you know, this is not magical thinking. Like this is companies like Catalyte today can come in and help your organization. You know, I'll pick on software engineering. We can help find amazing people today that are highly likely to be a high performer in your organization. And we can identify thousands of others that are probably going to be, if we give them just the right skills, and we've got a whole training curriculum that allows us to go ahead and get them trained up to the specific, you know, company requisites and requirements so that they're day one ready.
I connect the dots here too between high performers and better business performance. This research came out, again, some of the silver lining in it was that more profitable companies were less biased. So my question to you on that example is, what is the cause and what is the effect, do you think, of that? Are companies more profitable because they make unbiased hires, meaning a more diverse talent pool is helping them make better profit? Or are companies more profitable because they already have that rigor and systems in place to make unbiased hires, meaning the process is there. They aren't winging it. So that means that they're probably a more buttoned up and mature organization overall.
I would love to answer that question with some research. So I hope some people are, you know, I would have to, my hypothesis would be it's a combination of both. I mean, on the one hand, you know, I don't know, let's go back to Jackie Robinson in baseball. I mean, can you imagine a world where, you know, you're not actually taking advantage of the full spectrum of talent that's available for your organization? Like, how ridiculous is that? You know, and it's right now it's very clear that the resume is actually doing that. It's holding you back from seeing the full spectrum of talent. And then on the, you know, the full side of it, like, you know, the actual tools to identify, you'd imagine people that understand this are probably applying some level of data and thinking and structure to make sure that this is systematized and easy, frankly, for organizations to do it. You know, think about it just from a time perspective. How much time is wasted looking at these resumes, you know, going through them, you know, trying to, I guess, you know, divine which ones are good and which ones are bad. It's ridiculous. There's no one that has the power to do that because the resume itself is completely flawed because it's filled with exaggerations. It doesn't actually tell you about the person who's what their skills and aptitudes are, how that may match up with your organization. So, I mean, just from an efficiency standpoint, like why are people wasting their time on this, you know, inane way of going about identifying talent? Why not? I don't know. Throughout the lifetime of most people in America, you've been taking some type of exam or assessment to just understand where you are relative to others. You know, yet we get to a job, which is like you would imagine, like as high a stakes as that, if not higher for an organization.
Kind of important.
And they're like, you know, the organization's like, nah, we don't do that. You know, it's wild. And even more of a hypocrisy is most organizations do like some type of assessment, but they reserve it only for the executives. So the executives will get some type of assessment. They'll try to get some sense of like, what are the aptitudes of this person, you know, understand the fit, you know, something like the Hogan assessment, for example. It's very common. But when it comes to like the actual organization and everybody else, it's like, nah, we don't do that. Why? I mean, there's organizations like us that have like basically taken the friction out, taken the cost out, you know, taken the added the technology to it and being able to take the data that you're probably sitting on and make it useful and organized and privacy safe and, you know, ensuring that there's no adverse impact. That's all possible right now. And yet many companies in that list, you know, are being called out because they're just making bad decisions. They're filled with bias and they're not getting the best possible people.
Is public shaming a way to do this? Is that helpful at all? Or is this just going to be, you know, swept underneath the, you know, news cycle, and in 2 weeks people are just going to shrug about it? Like, what is going to actually get change? Is it the next research study that shows, you know, the advocacy and the efficiency of hiring a new way? Do we need to contact the, you know, National Bureau of Economic Research for a part two on this?
Yeah. I think that this is about to really open up, and I think that boards are already asking questions about how you know, data and AI are being used in an ethical way to make better decisions across an organization, and the HR department will not be immune. So this is coming in a big, big way, and I do think that, I don't know about shaming, but certainly if you're on that list and then on the naughty list, so to speak, I'm pretty sure most boards are going to be asking, like, why are we using resumes when there's clearly better alternatives out there? And I think it is the job of the board to really check on these things and challenge these things, because left to its own devices, organizations tend to sort of do what they've always been doing. So this is a great opportunity for boards, I think, to have a very strong opinion about this and really both set the company up for a strategic advantage going forward, but also mitigate bias in a way that ensures that you're getting access to the biggest pools of talent.
I hope you're right. The cynic in me says that I think those boards would see this survey, see this study, and go, okay, resumes aren't the problem. It's our people who are reading the resumes the problem. So we just need to get better people to read it, or just take out the name. If you take out the name, it's fine. So I think that we might still have a little bit of education there to go. I think that people tend to default to the easiest possible path, and it's still easier at the moment, I think, to use resumes for most organizations. So that's the bridge in my head that I'm still trying to figure out how we get across.
I think there's in any sort of distribution of companies, just you're probably right and I'm probably right. You know, there's going to be those that are early adopters, and there are those that are going to stick their head in the sand and say it's fine. I think the benefits ultimately, and the ability to both demonstrate, like, you know, the mitigation of bias, also, like, the benefits of, you know, using data to make better decisions in as it relates to talent, I think you're going to see a pretty steady stream of case studies that come out that sort of demonstrate this and make it very, very difficult for people to stand still in this and do what they've been doing. And frankly, even just the resume has always been flawed. I mean, in the age of AI, you know, you basically at this point have prospective employees using AI to create their resumes. And on the other end, you've got prospective employers for these employees using AI to read them. And they're both, you know, completely, like, not helping each other.
ChatGPT versus ChatGPT.
Exactly. And none of it is using actual insights about what, you know, would be best for both the employee and the employer. And that's the madness of all of this. You know, when I talk about using data, you know, I tend to more focus on the employer because, you know, they're the one making the investment, and it's so critical to success. But it really actually does go to the other side too. I think, you know, as a person who's trying to make the right decisions for your career, you know, wouldn't you want to know, like, you know, some sense of, like, you know, the areas where I line up really well with my skills and aptitudes to be successful, not as, like, a predestined sort of career path, but just good information to have, rather than leaning on, you know, in many people's cases, you know, your relatively small network of people that you know and what they've done that sort of ends up guiding people towards certain areas. This could really open up people to say, oh, I had no idea that I could be this. I mean, at Catalyte, you know, we've got thousands of examples of people who didn't know that software engineering could be, like, a really great career for them. And, you know, we were part of them identifying that, and ultimately, you know, they ran through the door and go on to these amazing careers.
Especially at this level, which is, the study was all about entry-level jobs where a person doesn't have a lot of experience, doesn't have a lot of education. A college degree wasn't even required for most of these positions. So there you don't even have, as a person, a lot of sort of history or understanding of where you can or want to go. So that then helps you even more understand what you have the ability and potential to do.
Yes, sir.
Matt Derella, CEO of Catalyte. We will continue this. I am thinking about this in sort of a last thought. I think it's a yes and, to take an improv phrase, that yes, getting rid of the resume can reduce the bias, and it's that and part that's going to convince people, and it will make you a more profitable company, and it'll make you a more efficient company, and it will make your job easier. That's the part we have to get to.
I'm with you, Adam, completely. So let's hope that's the second part of that study. We'll have to talk to the New York Times.
All right. Well, we'll pitch them this afternoon. I'll see if I can get them on my Rolodex.
I think that's a good idea. Truly.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Adam.